This is Lake Effect for Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. So glad you could be with us today. Over the past week, our Project Milwaukee State of Upheaval series has explored what the impact of the past year's contentious political happenings has had on Wisconsin. We've identified winners and losers of the political fight and explored what lies ahead for the Badger State. But we have to wonder, did it all matter? So what that the debates on collective bargaining, the role of unions, and the size of government made Wisconsin a national lightning rod? Would these conversations have happened eventually? What would Wisconsin look like if none of this had happened? With much respect to Mr. Frank Capra, we posed this It's a Wonderful Life-esque question to analysts and political players over the past week. Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce channels the angel Clarence to take us through this alternate Wisconsin.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives.
Clarence's rhetorical statement could easily be applied to Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker. Perhaps no other politician in the country inspired such extreme reactions in 2011. His stripping of collective bargaining rights for public workers was hailed by those on the right as a solution to a state in fiscal crisis. To those on the left, it was an overreach with even farther-reaching consequences. Both sides argued, however, that had Governor Walker not taken these steps, Wisconsin today would look much different. But whether the Wisconsin of the future would resemble George Bailey's beloved Bedford Falls or the desolate Pottersville depends on who you ask.
If it wasn't for Governor Walker and some of the other conservatives in Madison standing up for the taxpayers, we'd be looking at massive tax increases.
Matt Seaholm is the state director for Americans for Prosperity Wisconsin, a conservative advocacy group associated with the Tea Party movement. He says he shudders to think of a Wisconsin that employed tax increases to close the state's $3.6 billion structural deficit.
If we did that again, we would be facing massive deficits once again, and how would we address that? And I worry that it would just send us into a downward spiral that we've seen in other states like Illinois. You increase taxes, businesses are looking to go elsewhere. They take their jobs with them. For the first time in a long time, we've got businesses knocking on Wisconsin's door saying, how do we get in?
And if going after worker compensation and tax increases were off the table, conservative blogger Rick Essenberg says that would leave stark service reductions as the alternative.
Or what would have happened is that the governor and the legislature would have been able to kick the can down the road a little bit and sort of put this off by finding some more one-time fixes.
Nevertheless, Essenberg says a reckoning would have undoubtedly come at some point, given most funds had already been raided. But some, like Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen, wonder if that reckoning had to include getting rid of collective bargaining rights to balance the state's budget.
For certain, had he just gone after the money and stopped there, we would not have had the commotion that we had in Madison and the bitter feelings and the recalls.
Cullen compares Governor Walker's tactics to how Democrats nationally pushed through legislation in Congress with only their party's support. He says that just leads to the toxic partisan atmosphere we now have.
There's no question in my mind when the governor sought the money to balance the budget, had he just sought the money, the higher payments on pensions and higher payments for health insurance, if he just sought that and not gone after eliminating collective bargaining, he could have had a bill that could have conceivably actually attracted some Democratic votes.
Local labor leader Sheila Cochran believes it's unlikely Governor Walker would have gotten elected had he campaigned on repealing collective bargaining for public workers.
If these words had been uttered from his mouth, we have a lot of Republican union members. I want to be real clear. And a lot of them voted for him. A lot of them are circulating recall petitions right now. And they understand how far that's reached out.
Of course, Governor Walker does now face a recall effort led in part by the United Wisconsin PAC that says it's collected more than half of the necessary signatures. But the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's editorial page editor, David Haynes, says Governor Walker saw an opportunity in going after collective bargaining, even if he didn't fully anticipate the backlash.
He could do something about the budget. He could control labor costs. And he could hollow out a key constituency of the Democratic Party all at once. It's the trifecta if you're Walker. I think that Walker probably doesn't lose no matter what happens here because he has a cachet now with the right wing of the Republican Party nationally.
Even if Governor Walker hadn't taken on public unions, few believe that all would have been peaceful in the state capitol. Other partisan fights were still brewing, like Governor Walker's voter ID legislation, which, starting in February, requires voters to bring photo identification to the polls. Linda Jones is the editor of the Milwaukee Courier.
For the African American community, which I predominantly write for, two things that he did that are detrimental to our community is, one, killing the high-speed rail deal, and two, this rollback on voter ID restrictions and laws. That voter ID is all national agenda.
Scott Ross of the Madison-based progressive advocacy group One Wisconsin Now says his group would still have lobbied the governor on behalf of its supporters.
We have made a sacred promise to them that we're not going to stop fighting for Wisconsin that represents them in the public policy debate.
If there's one thing for certain, collective bargaining rights dominated the political conversation this year. But Public Policy Forum President Rob Hankin wonders, if it hadn't, what would the state have accomplished?
Issues like transportation and the environment and mental health services, just as examples, are issues that have sort of been pushed aside while we've been having this very passionate, very emotional, very highly charged debate about collective bargaining issues and about the worth of public sector employees.
Still, like others have said, Hankin believes this conversation was inevitable given the huge fiscal issues facing the state and municipalities like Milwaukee County. And had 2011 gone differently, the level of political activism in Wisconsin may not have been so high. Union leader Sheila Cochran says this year has refocused and re-energized unions.
There are two things that I can thank the governor for this year. Organizing solidarity with an organized labor like I've never seen it in my lifetime, and the 15 pounds that I've lost over stress dealing with it.
And so while debate continues on what will make it a wonderful life in Wisconsin, we can at least say it's certainly been an interesting one in 2011. For Lake Effect, I'm Clarence. I mean Stephanie Lecce.
Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce produced our It's a Wonderful Wisconsin feature. Coming up next, we'll have two very different takes on where Wisconsin was heading before 2011 and where it's going now in just a moment. More of Project Milwaukee's State of Upheaval comes your way next on Lake Effect.